Beyond double doors in each of these large outer rooms was a library.
"I've been here," Verdine said. "I remember this."
"Yes, Richard brought you here, but by a different route." Colin continued on to the 8th sitting room, and went through the double doors into the library there. She used her lamp to light the key lamp, and as before, all the rest lit, lifting the room out of its pitch blackness, bringing it to life. The floors were polished wood, with walls paneled in the same honey-colored oak. During the day, glassed windows on the far wall bathed the room with light and provided a beautiful view of Adendrill. Now, through the snow, Colin could only occasionally see the lights of the city below. She strode down the aisle between the reading tables and the rows upon rows of bookshelves, looking for the one she remembered. In this room alone there were 145 rows of books. There were comfortable chairs to use while reading, but tonight they would need the tables to lay out the books.
"So this is the library?" Kara said. "In Dahara, at the People's Palace, there are libraries much larger than this."
"This is only one of 26 rooms like this. I can only imagine how many thousands of books are here in the keep," Colin said.
"Then how are we ever going to find the ones we're looking for?" Verdine asked.
"It shouldn't be as hard as it sounds. The libraries can be a bewildering maze when you wish to find something. I used to know a wizard who searched on and off his whole life for a bit of information he knew was in the libraries. He never found it."
"Then how can we?"
"Because there are a few things that are specialized enough that they are kept together. Books of language, for example. I can take you to all the books on any specific language, because they're not about magic, and so they're in one place. I don't know how books on magic and prophecy are organized, if they even are. Anyway, this library is where certain records are kept, such as the records of trials held here. I've not read them, but I was taught about them."
Colin turned and led them between two rows of shelves. Nearly midway down the 50-foot-long aisle, she came to a halt.
"Here they are. I can see by the writing on the spine that they're in different languages. Since I know all the languages but High Dahoran, I'll search all the ones in other languages. Kara, you look at the ones in ours, and Verdine, you take the ones in High Dahoran."
The three of them started picking books from the shelves and carrying them to the tables, separating them into three stacks. There weren't as many as Colin had feared. Verdine had only 7 books, Kara had 15, and Colin 11, in a variety of languages. For Verdine it would be slow going translating the Dahoran, but Colin was fluent in the other languages, and she would be able to help with Kara's stack as soon as she finished her own. As Colin started in, she quickly found that it was going to be easier than she'd first thought. Each trial began with a statement of the type of crime, making it simple to eliminate those that had nothing to do with the Temple of the Winds. There were charges against the accused, ranging from the taking of a cherished object of little worth to murder. A sorceress was accused of casting a glamour, but was found innocent. A boy of 12 was accused of starting a fight, in which another boy's arm was broken. Because the aggressor had used magic to cause the injury, the sentence was the suspension of his training for a period of 1 year. A wizard was accused of being a drunkard, a third offense, the prior punishments having failed to halt his belligerent behavior. He was found guilty and sentenced to death. The sentence was carried out 2 days later, when he had sobered. Habitually, drunken wizards were viewed not with tolerance, but as the true dangers they were, capable, in their inebriated state, of causing mass injury and death. Colin herself had seen wizards drink to excess only one time. The accounts of the trials were fascinating, but the seriousness of their purpose kept Colin skimming through the books, looking for a reference to the Temple of the Winds or to a team charged with a crime. The other two were making quick progress, too. In an hour, Colin had finished all 11 books in the other languages. Verdine had only 3 left, and Kara 6.
"Anything?" Colin asked.
Kara lifted an eyebrow.
"I just found an account of a wizard who fancied hiking up his robes in front of women in the market on Stenter Street and commanding them to kiss the serpent. I never knew wizards could get themselves in such a variety of trouble."
"They're people, just like any other people."
"No, they're not. They have magic," Kara said.
"So do I. Have you found anything, Verdine?"
"No, not what we're looking for, just common crimes."
Colin reached for one of the books Kara hadn't been through, but paused.
Verdine, you were down in the room with the sliff.
Verdine made a show of shivering and produced a sound of revulsion from deep in her throat.
Oh, don't remind me.
Colin shut her eyes, trying to remember the room. She remembered Kolo's bones, and she remembered the sliff, but she only vaguely recalled what else was in the room.
Verdine, do you remember if there were any other books down there?
Verdine bit down on the end of a fingernail as she squinted in concentration.
I remember finding Kolo's journal open on the table, an inkwell and pen. I remember Kolo's bones lying on the floor next to the chair with most of his clothes long ago rotted away. His leather belt was still around him.
Colin remembered much the same thing.
But do you remember if there were any books on the shelves?
Verdine turned her eyes up as she thought.
No.
No, there weren't, or no, you don't remember?
No, I don't remember. Lord Rawl was really excited about finding Kolo's journal. He said it was something different from the books in the library, and he felt it was what he had been searching for. Something different. We left right after that.
Colin stood.
You two keep looking through these books. I'm going down there and have a look, just to be sure.
Kara's chair clattered against the floor as she stood.
I will go with you.
There are rats down there.
Her expression vexed, Kara put a hand on her hip.
I've seen rats before. I will go with you.
Colin remembered well Kara's story about the rats.
Kara, there's no need. I don't need your protection in the keep. Outside, yes, but in here, I know the dangers better than you. I told you I wouldn't take you near dangerous magic. Down there is dangerous magic.
Then there is danger to you.
No, because I know about it. You don't. The danger would be to you, not me. I grew up here. My own mother let me have the run of the keep when I was a little girl because I was taught about the dangers and how to avoid them. I know what I'm doing. Please, stay here with Verdine and finish going through the books. It will save us time, and it's important. The sooner we find the one we're looking for, the sooner we can get home to watch over Richard. That's where our real concern is.
Kara's leather creaked as she shifted her weight.
I guess you would know the dangers of the magic here better than I.
I think you're right about getting home. Nadine is back there.
Chapter 35. Colin tried to overlay her mental map of the keep on the passageways, stairwells, and rooms she traversed as she wound her way lower. Rats squeaked and skittered away from her lap. Although she had often seen the tower outside Kolo's room from the ramparts and walkways up on top of the keep, she had never been down inside it until Richard had taken her there. Unfortunately, Richard had taken her there by way of dangerous passages, through shields she would never be able to get through on her own. She was confident that there were other routes down to Kolo's room. There were vast areas of the keep that weren't protected by any shields at all. She had only to find a way without shields, or with shields that her magic would be able to pass. The areas that Richard had taken her, protected by dangerous shields, she didn't know at all, since she had never been beyond those before, but she was familiar with a myriad of ways to get around them. Oftentimes, the hard shields, as the wizards used to call them, were meant to protect something just beyond, rather than specifically to prevent passage to another area. Many of the rooms Richard had taken her through were like that, places of menacing magic she had never seen before. They oftentimes provided a more direct route, but required special magic. If she was correct, that Richard had traversed a maze through dangerous places rather than going through hard shields specifically protecting the tower, then there would be a way around the dangerous areas and into the tower room. In her experience, that was the way the keep worked. If the tower room was meant to be off-limits, then it would be protected by its own hard shields. If it wasn't forbidden, then there would be at least one way she could enter. She had but to find it. Even though she had spent a great deal of time in the keep, much of that time was spent in the library studying. She had explored, of course, but the keep was almost inconceivably vast. Not only was the part that could be seen from the outside immense, but much more of the keep was burrowed into the mountain. The outer walls were only the tip of the keep, the visible part of the tooth, with much more of the root hidden beneath. Colin went through an empty room chiseled from bedrock to one of the passages on the other side. There were numerous empty rooms in the Wizard's Keep. Some of them, like the ones she had just passed through, seemed nothing more than junctions where various passages connected, possibly enlarged to provide reference points. The square-sided passage through the rock ahead appeared carefully cut and smoothed. Her lamp illuminated bands of symbols incised in the granite, with round areas in the field of swirling carvings polished to a high luster. Each encircling band marked the location of a mild shield that tingled against her flesh as she passed through. Ahead, she saw the hall split into three passageways. Before she reached the junction, the air about her suddenly hummed. It took two steps before she could halt her onward rush. Each of those two steps caused the hum to raise in pitch to an uncomfortable buzzing. Her long hair lifted from her shoulders and back to stand straight out in all directions. The band carved in the stone ahead immediately began to glow red. Colin retreated several paces. The humming lowered in pitch. Her hair settled down. She cursed under her breath. A humming shield was an urgent warning to stay away. The red glow displayed the region of the shield itself. The hum warned that you were entering the field of a dangerous shield. Some of these hard shields would actually prevent a person without the required magic from getting too close by making the very air get as thick as mud and then stone. Some of the humming shields didn't prevent entry, but walking into one would sear the flesh and muscle right off a person's bones. The lesser shields were meant to keep people without magic and thus knowledge from getting close to the danger. Colin turned and held up the lamp as she quickly retraced her steps to the room. She took a different passageway that ran in the general direction she wanted to go. It was a much more congenial-looking hall, with whitewashed walls and ceiling, making the lamp better able to brighten her way. She encountered no shields at all in the White Hall. A stairway took her lower into the keep. Another stone hall at the bottom provided quick travel, devoid of shields. In her mind, she was retracing the halls, rooms, stairs, and cramped tunnels, and was pretty sure that, by eliminating the false routes she had taken, there was a way to get to and from the tower without encountering any shields. Colin threw open the door at the end of the stone hall and stepped out onto a walkway with an iron railing. She held the lamp up in front of her. She stood at the bottom level of the tower. The walkway ringed the hall. Stairs wound their way up around the inside of the immense stone tower, with landings at other doors along the way. In the center, at the bottom of the tower, lurked a pool of black water. Rocks broke the surface of the water here and there. Bugs skittered across the inky surface of the pool. Salamanders rested on the rocks, their eyes rolling to watch her. This was the place where she and Richard had fought the Mriswith Queen. Her stinking, broken eggs still littered the rock. Small bits of the door blasted from Kolo's room still floated in the pool, providing islands for fat bugs that hissed at the intrusion. Across the water, on the opposite side of the round tower room, was the opening to Kolo's room. Colin quickly made her way around the walkway to the wide platform outside Kolo's room. The doorway had been blown open, leaving blackened, jagged edges. In some places, the stone itself was melted like candle wax. The tower wall outside the doorway was streaked with blackened lines of soot from the unleashed power that had opened Kolo's room for the first time in millennia. When Richard had destroyed the Towers of Perdition, it had destroyed the magic seal on this room, too. The towers had sealed the old world away from the new in the Great War 3,000 years before. They had also sealed the room with the slif, and sealed in the man who had been unfortunate enough to be the one guarding her at the time. Stone fragments crunched under her feet as Colin stepped into the room where Kolo had died, the room where dwelled the slif. The silence was oppressive. It droned in her ears, making her welcome the relief of her footsteps. Richard had awakened the slif after thousands of years. The Sliff had taken Richard to the old world and had brought him and Colin safely back to Adendrill. When they returned, Richard had put the Sliff back to sleep. All the years Colin had spent in the keep, and she had never known the Sliff was there. Colin couldn't even imagine the magic the wizards of old could use to conjure a being such as the Sliff, or how they could have put her to sleep for all that time so that she could wake again. Only at the fringes of her imagination could she conceive of the power Richard wielded, but didn't comprehend. What would the war wizards of old, who knew their gift well, have been able to do with such unfathomable magic? What terrors would a war among those with that kind of power have been like? The very thought gave her shivers. It would have been things like the plague that had been set upon them now. They could do those kinds of things. The lamplight fell across Kolo's bones beside the chair. The pen and inkwell still sat on the dusty table. The round room, nearly 60 feet across, was capped with a high domed ceiling, itself nearly as tall as the room was wide. In the center was a round stone wall, like a well, 25 or 30 feet across. There dwelled the Sliff. Colin held the light over the wall of the well and glanced briefly down the smooth stone walls of the dark shaft that fell away seemingly forever. The walls of the room were scorched in ragged lines, as if lightning had gone wild in the place. Another result of the same magic Richard had invoked when he destroyed the towers and when the doorway had been blasted open. Colin strode quickly around the room, checking to see if there was anything that might be useful. There was nothing in the room other than the table, chair, and Kolo, except for a dusty set of shelves. Colin was disappointed to find that there were no books on the shelves. There were 3 faded blue, glazed, lidded containers, probably once holding water or soup for the wizard on duty guarding the Sliff. A white, glazed bowl held a silver spoon. A neatly folded cloth, or embroidery of some sort, sat on one of the shelves. When she touched it, it disintegrated into dust and little flakes where her fingers contacted it. Colin bent lower, seeing that the bottom shelf held only a few spare candles and a lamp. An abrupt sensation of icy alarm inundated her. She was being watched. She froze, holding her breath, telling herself that it was just her imagination. The fine hairs at the back of her neck stiffened. She felt a cold wave of goose flesh run up her arms. She strained to hear a telling sound. Her toes cringed inside her boots. She feared to move. Carefully, quietly, she let her lungs draw a needed breath. Slowly, ever so slowly, so as not to make a sound, she straightened a little. She dared not move her feet, lest the stone chips crunch. Courage, as thin as eggshells, urged her to hide behind the wall of the Sliff's well. From there, she could determine if it was only her imagination spooking her. Perhaps it was just a rat. She twisted to check the distance to the stone wall. Colin sucked a cry as she flinched back. Chapter 36. The quicksilver face of the Sliff had risen above the edge of the stone wall and was watching her. The glossy, metallic female features of the Sliff reflected the lamplight and the room in a living mirror. It was obvious why Kolo called the Sliff she. The Sliff was a silver statue, except it moved with liquid grace. Colin pressed a hand to her hammering heart as she panted, getting her breath. The Sliff watched her, as if curious about what Colin might do next. Kolo often said in his journal that she was watching him.
"Sliff," Colin stammered, "what are you doing awake?"
The face distorted into a puzzled frown.
"Do you wish to travel?"
The eerie voice echoed around the room. Her lips hadn't moved as she spoke, but she smiled pleasantly.
"Travel? No."
Colin took a step toward the well.
"Sliff, Richard put you to sleep. I was here.
Master, he woke me.
Yes, Richard woke you. He traveled in you. He rescued me, and I traveled back with him. In you.
Colin recalled that strange experience with a certain fondness. To travel in the Slif, you had to breathe her in. It was frightening at first, but with Richard there holding her hand, Colin had been able to do it, and had discovered the enthralling sensation of traveling. To breathe the Slif was rapture.
I remember,
the Slif said.
Once you are in me, I remember.
But don't you remember Richard putting you to sleep again?
He woke me from the sleep of ages, but he did not put me back into the long sleep. He put me at rest until I was needed.
But we thought you had gone back to sleep. Why are you not at rest now?
I felt you near. I came to look.
Colin stepped to the stone wall.
Slif, has someone traveled in you since Richard and I last did?
Yes, I was used.
Suddenly realization broke through her surprise.
A man and a woman, they traveled in you, didn't they?
The Slif's smile turned sly, but she didn't answer. Colin touched her fingers to the stone wall.
Who was it, Slif, who traveled in you?
You should know that I never betray those I hold within me.
I should know? How would I know?
You have traveled in me. I would not reveal you. I never betray my clients. You traveled, so you must understand.
Colin licked her lips patiently.
Slif, I'm afraid that I don't know anything about you, really. You are from a time before my time, from another age. I only know that you can travel, and that you helped me before. You were a valuable aid in defeating some very bad people.
I am glad that you were pleased with me. Perhaps you would like to be pleased again. Would you like to travel again?
A shiver ran up Colin's spine.
This had to be why Marlin was trying to get to the keep. He and Sister Amelia must have come to Adendrill from the old world in the Slif.
Jagang had said he had waited to reveal himself until she returned. How else could she have returned to him so fast, except in the Slif? Colin swept out an imploring arm.
Slif, some very evil people.
She halted, sucking a breath through her open mouth. Her eyes widened.
Slif,
she whispered,
you took me to the old world before.
Ah, I know the place. Come, we will travel.
No, not there. Slif, can you travel other places?
Of course.
Where?
Many places. You must know. You have traveled. Name the place that would pleasure you, and we will travel.
Colin leaned toward the alluring, smiling silver face.
The witch woman? Can you take me to the witch woman?
I do not know this place.
It's not a place. It's a person. She lives in the Rang Shadar Mountains, in a place called Agadan Reach. Can you go there, to Agadan Reach?
Ah, I have been there. Come, we will travel.
Colin touched her trembling fingers to her lips.
Come, and we will travel,
the Slif said, her haunting voice echoing around the ancient stone walls. The sound died out slowly, letting silence settle once more, covering everything like the veil of dust in the room. Colin cleared her throat.
I have to go do something first. Will you still be here when I get back? Will you wait for me?
If I am at rest, you can let me know of your need, and we will travel. You will be pleased.
You mean, if you're not right here, I should call down to you, and you will come to me and we will travel?
Yes, we will travel.
Colin rubbed her hands together as she backed away.
I'll be back. I'll be back soon, and we will travel.
Yes, the Sliff said, watching Colin retreat. We will travel.
Colin snatched the lamp from where she had set it on the floor near the shelves. She paused at the door, looking back at the quicksilver face floating in the gloom.
I'll be back. Soon. We will travel.
Yes, we will travel,
the Sliff said as Colin started running. Colin had to struggle to think where she was going as she ran. Her mind spun with arguments. While she grappled with her alternatives, she also tried to pay attention as she turned down halls, raced through rooms, and dashed upstairs. She seemed to reach Library Hall before she was ready. Huffing, she realized that she couldn't run in on Kara and Verdeen in such a state. They would know something was wrong. Not far from the library where the two moored Sith waited, Colin collapsed onto a padded bench, letting the lamp slip to the floor. She leaned back against the wall and stretched out her aching legs. She fanned her face with one hand. She gulped air and tried to convince her heart to slow down. She knew her face must be red as an apple. She couldn't walk in on the other two like this. Colin made plans as she rested, waiting for her heart to slow, her lungs to recover, her face to cool. Shota knew something about the plague. Colin was sure of it. Shota had said about Richard, "May the spirits have mercy on his soul." Shota had sent Nadine to marry Richard. Colin vividly recollected Nadine's tight dress, her flirtatious smiles at Richard, her accusations telling Richard that Colin was heartless, the look in Nadine's eyes when she talked to him. Colin thought about what she must do. Shota was a witch woman. Everyone feared the witch woman. Even wizards feared Shota. Colin had never done anything against her, but that had never stopped Shota from hurting her. Shota might kill her. Not if Colin killed her first. The distraction of making plans had allowed her to regain her composure. She stood, smoothed down her dress, and took a deep, settling breath. Colin put on her confessor's face and strode through the doors to the library where the other two waited. Kara and Verdeen popped out from behind a row of bookshelves. The books were gone from the table. Kara eyed Colin suspiciously.
You've been gone long enough.
It took me a while to find a way with shields I could pass.
Verdeen came out from behind the shelves.
Well, did you find anything?
Find anything? Like what?
Verdeen spread her hands.
Books? You went to look for books?
No. Nothing.
Kara was frowning.
Did you have any problems?
No, I'm just upset about all this. About everything. The plague and all. I'm upset that I couldn't find anything to help. What about you two?
Verdeen swiped a stray strand of hair back from her face.
Nothing. Nothing about the Temple of the Winds or the team who sent it away.
I don't understand, Colin said, mostly to herself. If there was a trial, as Kolo said, then there should be a record of it.
Well, Verdeen said, we were looking through the other books to see if we missed any of the records of the trials. We didn't find any. Where else can we look?
Colin sagged in disappointment. She had been sure they would find a record of the trial for Richard.
Nowhere. If it isn't here, then there must be no record of the trial, or else it was destroyed. From what Kolo said, the keep was in an uproar at the time. They may have been too busy to keep a record.
Verdeen cocked her head.
But we're going to keep looking for part of the night, at least.
Colin looked about the library.
No, it would be a waste of time. The time would be better spent if you kept working on Kolo's journal. If we don't have the record of the trial, translating the journal would be the best help to Richard. Maybe you can find something important in the journal.
In the brightness of the library, Colin's resolve was beginning to falter. She began to reconsider her plan.
Well, Kara said, I guess we better get back then. No telling what Nadine will be up to. If she gets into Lord Rawl's room, she'll get blisters kissing him while he's asleep and helpless.
Verdeen pressed her lips tight and smacked Kara's shoulder. "What's the matter with you? The Mother Confessor is a sister of the Aegil." Kara blinked in surprise. "Forgive me. I was only making a joke." She touched Colin's arm. "You know that I will kill Nadine if you wish. You have but to ask." "Don't worry. Reyna would not let Nadine into his room." Colin wiped a tear from her cheek. "I know. It's just that with all that's going on, I know." Her mind was made up. It might help Richard find an answer. It might help Richard discover something that would stop the plague. Colin knew she was only making excuses to herself. She knew why she was going.
"Did you find what you were looking for?"
Reyna asked as Colin, Kara, and Verdine approached.
"No,"
Colin said. "There was no record of the trial."
"I'm sorry,"
Reyna said. Colin gestured to the door.
"Has anyone tried to bother him?"
Reyna smirked.
"She came by. She wanted to check on Lord Rawl to make sure he was sleeping," she said.
Colin didn't have to ask who came by. Her blood heated.
"And you let her in?"
Reyna smiled that dark smile of hers.
"I put my head in, saw that Lord Rawl was asleep, and told her so. I didn't let her have so much as a peek at him."
"Good. But she'll probably be back." Reyna's smile widened.
"I don't think so. I told her that if I caught her in this hall again tonight, she would feel my Aegil against her bare bottom. When she left, there was no doubt in her mind that I meant it."
Kara laughed. Colin couldn't.
"Reyna, it's late. Why don't you and Verdine go get some sleep?"
Colin caught the quick glance to Verdine. "Verdine, just like Lord Rawl, needs to get some rest so that she can work on the journal tomorrow. We all need some rest. Ulick and Egan here will watch over Richard." Reyna slapped the back of her hand against Ulick's stomach.
"You boys up to it? Can you handle it without me?"
Ulick scowled down at the Mord Sith.
"We are the Lord Rawl's bodyguards. If anyone tried to get into his room, there wouldn't be enough left for you to pick your teeth with."
Reyna shrugged.
"I guess the boys can handle it. Let's go, Verdine. It's about time you got a good night's sleep for a change."
Kara stood beside Colin as she watched Verdine and Reyna stride off down the hall, passing a critical eye over soldiers on patrol.
"You are right about rest. You need to get some sleep too, Mother Confessor," Kara said. "You don't look well."
I want to check on Richard first. I'll be able to sleep better if I know he's all right. I'll be back out in a minute."
She gave Kara a firm look to discourage any ideas she might have about going in with her.
"Why don't you go get some sleep, too?"
Kara clasped her hands behind her back.
"I will wait."
Richard's room was dark, but the light coming from the window proved enough to find the bed. Colin stood beside him and listened to his even breathing.
What if she never saw him again?
She knew how distressed Richard was by recent events. She felt the same pain. How many families were suffering in grief this night? How many more would be suffering the next night, and the night after? Colin sat lightly on the edge of the bed. She slipped an arm under his shoulders and strained to gently lift him. He murmured her name under his breath in his sleep, but didn't wake as she set him up a bit and leaned the heavy weight of him against her. Colin reached behind and picked up the glass with the sleeping potion Nadine had made. It was still half full. She held it to his mouth and tipped it, letting the potion slide to his lips. He stirred slightly and swallowed as she tipped the glass higher.
"Drink, Richard,"
she urged in a whisper. She kissed his forehead.
"Drink, my love. It will help you sleep."
She tipped the glass a little more each time he swallowed, forcing him to drink more. When he had taken most of it, she set it behind once more. He murmured her name again. Colin hugged his head, holding his cheek to her breast. She pressed her cheek to the top of his head as a tear rolled over the bridge of her nose and fell into his hair.
"I love you so much, Richard,"
she whispered.
"No matter what, don't ever doubt how much I love you."
He mumbled something she couldn't understand, except for the word love. Colin eased him back onto the pillow and slipped her arm out from underneath him. She pulled up his covers. She kissed her finger and gently pressed the kiss to his lips before she left the room. On the way to her own room, she again told Kara that she should go get some sleep.
I will not leave you unguarded, Kara insisted.
Kara, you need sleep too.
Kara glanced over out of the corner of her eye.
I have no intention of letting Lord Rawl down again.
When Colin started to protest, Kara spoke over her words.
I will be posting soldiers outside your room, too. I can nap there, and if anything happens, I will be at hand. I'll get enough sleep.
Colin had things to do. She needed Kara out of her hair.
You saw how Richard was when he didn't get enough sleep.
Kara let out a dismissive chuckle.
Maud Sith are stronger than men. Besides, he was like that because he hadn't slept for days. I slept last night.
Colin didn't want to argue. She was frantically trying to think of how to overcome this obstacle in skin-tight leather. She couldn't let Kara know what she was doing. Sister of the Aegil or not, Kara would tell Richard. There was no doubt of that. That was the last thing Colin wanted. Under no circumstances did she want Richard knowing what she was going to do. She would have to think of a new plan.
I don't know if I'm ready for bed. I'm kind of hungry.
You look tired, Mother Confessor. You need sleep, not food. You won't sleep as well if you eat right before bed. I want you to get a good sleep, like Lord Rawl. You can sleep well, knowing that Nadine will not be going near him. I have a good idea of what Raina said to Nadine, and I can assure you that as brazen as that strumpet is, she has enough sense to heed a warning from Raina. You have no cause for fear tonight, so you can sleep well.
Kara, what are you afraid of,
besides magic and rats? Kara scowled.
I don't like rats. I am not afraid of them.
Colin didn't believe a word of it. She waited until they were out of earshot of a patrol passing in the opposite direction.
What scares you? What do you fear?
Nothing.
Kara, Colin admonished, it's me, Colin, a sister of the Aegil. Everyone is afraid of something.
I wish to die in battle, not weak and sick in a bed, at the hands of some unseen foe. I fear Lord Rawl getting the plague and leaving us without a master of Dahara.
I'm afraid of that too,
Colin whispered. I'm afraid of Richard getting the plague and everyone else I love.
You,
Verdine, Raina, Ulic, Egan, and everyone I know here at the palace.
Lord Rawl will find a way to stop it.
Colin hooked some hair behind her ear.
Are you afraid of not finding a man who will love you?
Kara flashed Colin an incredulous look.
Why would I be afraid of that? I have but to give any man permission to love me, and he would.
Colin let her gaze drift from Kara to the columns at the sides of the room they were passing through. Their boot strikes echoed off the marble floor.
I love Richard. A confessor's magic will destroy a man if she loves him. You know, when they're together. Only because Richard is special, has special magic, can he love me in return. I'm terrified of losing him. I want no one but Richard, ever. But even if I wanted, I couldn't. No other man could express his love for me except Richard. I could never have anyone else.
Kara's voice softened in sympathy.
Lord Rawl will find a way to stop the plague.
They passed from the marble floor onto the quiet of carpets running up the stairs toward Colin's room.
Kara, I'm terrified of losing Richard to Nadine.
Lord Rawl does not care for Nadine. I can see it in his eyes that he has no interest in her.
Lord Rawl only has eyes for you.
Colin ran her fingers along the smooth marble railing as she ascended the stairs.
Kara, a witch woman sent Nadine.
Kara had no answer for that. Magic was involved. When they came at last to the door to her rooms, Colin paused. She looked into Kara's blue eyes.
Kara, will you make me a promise, as a sister of the Aegil?
If I can.
With all that's going on, so much has gone wrong already. Will you promise me that if something happens, if I somehow make a mistake, the worst mistake I've ever made, and I somehow get things wrong, will you promise me that you won't let it be her instead of me who has Richard?
What could happen? Lord Rawl loves you, not that woman.
Anything could happen. The plague, Shota, anything. Please, Kara, I couldn't bear to think that if anything happened, Nadine would have my place with Richard.
Colin clutched Kara's arm.
Please, I'm begging you. Promise me?
Kara's intent blue eyes stared back. Mord Sith didn't take oaths lightly. Colin knew that she was asking for something of solemn importance. She was asking Kara to swear her life on this, for that was what it meant for a Mord Sith to give her word. Kara brought her Aegil up in her fist. She kissed it. Nadine will not have your place with Lord Rawl. I swear it. Colin nodded, words failing her for a moment.
Get some sleep, Mother Confessor.
I will be here watching your rooms. No one will bother you. You can sleep well knowing that Nadine will never take your place. You have my oath.
Thank you, Kara,
Colin whispered in gratitude.
You truly are a sister of the Aegil. If you ever want a favor in return, you have but to name it.
Chapter 37 Colin was finally able to send away Nancy and her helper, telling them that she was exhausted and wanted only to go to bed. She had to decline an offer of a bath, having her hair brushed, a massage, and food, but she let Nancy help her with her dress so as not to raise the woman's suspicion. Colin rubbed her bare arms in the chill after she was alone at last. She tested her wound under the bandage. It was healing well and hardly hurt her any more. Drefin had helped it, and she supposed that Nadine's poultices had been a benefit, too. Colin slipped on a dressing gown and went to the writing desk beside one of the hearths. The heat felt good, but it only warmed one side of her. She pulled paper and pen from a drawer. As she took the silver lid from the ink bottle, she